everyone has had an opportunity to go through chapter 7. Are you ready for me?
I am.
Okay. Hopefully everyone's gone through chapter 7 in our book. It's called Total Makeover. And the authors did a wonderful job in explaining how the world tries to form us and mold us, but God is who gives us he's the ultimate makeover expert. So what I'd like to do with my time up here is I would like to give you all my firsthand account of how the Lord has started a makeover process in my life. My name is Kalila Foster. My nickname is Kay. I am happily married to Jeffrey Foster. We've been married for 16 years. We have four children ranging in age from ages 2 to 13. I am a stay-at-home mom, and I have the privilege to homeschool our children. If you look at our current home life, you would find that our current condition does not at all resemble the home in which I came from. I was born in Dayton, Ohio. I heard someone else was too. Yep, I was born in Dayton, Ohio. I am the youngest of three children. I was not raised in a Christian home. And we were all raised by our grandparents. At a young age, my father and my grandfather died. And so early on, I did not have male leadership modeled in my life. I had not seen that. However, on the other hand, there were plenty of strong, assertive, and I'd go as far as saying aggressive women with a few of the Lady Wild sprinkled in. And so in our home, a soft, amenable, agreeable disposition was not modeled, and it really wasn't encouraged. The funny thing is my middle name means strong disposition. So I thought it was hilarious I got this chapter. So because the way I grew up, let me back up. So I mentioned my grandfather who raised us, he died early on. And once he died, things really got tough. We struggled financially. We lived, we kind of hovered around the poverty line. And many of my basic needs really were not met. In high school, I even had to pay rent to live on the couch in my grandmother's living room. And so because of those circumstances and many others, I really struggled with insecurities and fear. I had a lot of insecurity where I just needed to feel secure. When I say insecurity, that's what I mean. I felt like I had a fear of not being provided for. But everything wasn't bad growing up. When I was in the fourth grade, I had a 19-year-old cousin who took an interest in me. She's only 19. But she became like a mother figure to me. She really invested in my life, and she was the first person that really cast a vision for my life. One of those visions she had for me was that I attend college in her footsteps, which was a big deal. Not many people in our family had graduated from college. And so in order to pay for college, she helped me to be hired at the Chrysler Corporation as an assembly operator, shooting screws on an assembly line, because they had a tuition reimbursement program. So I'll tell you, in hindsight, I look back, and even though I did not know the Lord yet, I see his hand orchestrating many events in my early life. It's amazing to me because my cousin, she was 19, but she remained single throughout my entire childhood and early adulthood, which I think was a blessing to me, because it allowed her to have a single focus on seeing to it that I became a productive citizen. So while I was at Chrysler, I would shoot screws on the assembly line for 8 to 12 hours a day, and then I would go to college at night. During that time, I met this sweetheart of a guy. I don't know if sweetheart is good for a man, but he was just a real sweetheart. And I think one reason I loved him so is because he let me lead. I'm just keeping it real. And so he unfortunately worked for the enemy, General Motors, which I thought was funny. So eventually I worked my way through school. I earned my bachelor's degree, graduated with honors, and moved up the corporate ladder. I ended up in positions where I managed well over hundreds of employees. I managed tens of millions of dollars or more of assets. my career was going great. I had a college education. I had a man who loved me. I mean, life was looking good. But you know what? I still did not have that sense of security that I longed for so much. So, you know, I think it's amazing because God is so good. He is able to take what looks like all of these unrelated events and allow them to converge around the same time for great impact in our lives. And I think that's what he did for me. Around my 25th birthday, right afterwards, I had gotten word that a high school classmate died in a car accident. It was kind of strange because I felt this overwhelming desire or need to go to her memorial service. And so I remember I arrived there early before anyone was there, went in, signed the guest book, and I walked up and there she was laying in that casket. And that really just shocked me. About a month later, there was an R&B recording artist. Her name was Aaliyah. And her music was the one constant rotation in my tape deck. And Aaliyah, they announced that she was killed in a tragic plane accident. And it was just another shock to me. Here she was young, she was beautiful, she had all of her life ahead of her, but yet now she was dead. Coincidentally, and I do say that tongue in cheek, coincidentally around this time, my boyfriend and I decided to visit the church of his parents. And there was a visiting minister there from California who spoke to the youth, and he spoke about the death of Aaliyah. And at the end of his sermon, he asked a question to the congregation. He said, "If you were to die today, do you know if you will go to heaven or not?" You know what? That was shocking to me. I had never heard of such a thing before. I did not know that there was a way in this life to know anything about the afterlife. And so it kind of troubled me. And I remember the next morning I got up and I looked up the phone number to that church and I called the pastor this is probably how I sound. I said, this is on the voicemail. I was at your church Sunday and that preacher said something about knowing about what happens after this life. Can you please call me? Because I need to figure this out. So we ended up playing phone tag. We went back and forth. We played phone tag back and forth. We could not get in contact with each other. Well, my boyfriend's stepmom ended up calling me. And I asked her. I needed to know. And she said, "Oh, sweetie, I'm sure that you're saved. How about we have a 6-week Bible study on salvation assurance, and by the end of the 6 weeks, you will know if you're going to heaven or not." She knew I wasn't saved. So we set out on that journey, and 6 weeks later, it was interesting, no light bulb moments or anything. And so we decided to continue our study, but this time my boyfriend and his father joined us. And so we meet each week, we'd eat dinner together, clear the table, and then sit down for Bible study. So around 2002, it was almost Easter, so in anticipation for Easter, we decided to go over the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. And it was during that study that I realized for the first time that it was my sin that nailed Jesus to that cross, and it was at their dining room table that I surrendered my life to Jesus. And so after Easter, we continued our Bible study, and my boyfriend's parents suggested that we change subjects and do a study on God's design for the family. They mentioned it, and I said, "Sure, I got a family. He's got a family. Everybody's got a family. Why not?" So as we started the study, it became evident to me that God's design for the family was actually premarital training. I will tell you honestly, I was a bit offended because I was a businesswoman. I had a great career and I was not trying to be anybody's wife. So 6 months later, Jeff and I were married. And after we were married, we continued our Bible study, but this time our subject was faith. And I believe that the Lord used that to prepare us for what was coming next. So fast forward a few years, Jeff and I were expecting our first child, Braylon. And I had a dear friend of mine that I worked with at Chrysler who suggested that I not rule out the possibility of being a stay-at-home mom. Now, for me, that was, it was out-of-the-box thinking. I had never considered being a stay-at-home mom. As far as I was concerned, the title of being a stay-at-home mom, that was reserved for executives' wives, not a wife of an assembly operator. That's what my husband did. And so I mentioned it to Jeff. We laughed about it, how ridiculous of an idea it was. But you know what? As time went on, we kept revisiting the idea, you know, throughout the pregnancy. And so when we stripped away all of the material concerns, all of the temporal things, we came down to three bottom line ideas. The first one was we knew that our biblical priorities were God first, our marriage, and then our children before all other responsibilities. Number two, we knew that we did not come from a family that was aligned to biblical principles, and that if we were to rise above the brokenness that we had seen in our homes of origin, that we'd have to do something different and maybe something a little more drastic. Mm-hmm. And then number three, we believe that the demands of my career would not support our efforts to have a strong marriage and a strong family because I was traveling. The bosses were talking about me possibly starting a facility up in Mexico at the time. And so we came to those conclusions, and I'll tell you, our baby ended up coming 2 months early. Whoa, that kind of pushed our timeline up. So we really didn't have a lot of preparation in place. But I think that him coming early, our son coming early, that kind of solidified our decision. It made us realize how precious of a life we had. And I ended up putting in my resignation, my letter of resignation, after my maternity leave was up. All right, so it's the spring of 06. Jeff was working at General Motors. Sorry, my voice keeps cracking. And he, this time, is in college working at night, working and then going to school at night. The plan was that he would finish school and then change career path so that he could better provide for our family. During this time, he was also working on his final thesis. So we had no clue that when I gave up my job in 06 that we were at the foot of the whole market crash, the market crisis, I think around 08. And so 2 months after I gave my letter of resignation, General Motors announced that they were providing an attrition program, which basically would provide any employee willing to leave the company a lump sum of funds to sever ties in addition to some other benefits. And so when it was announced, Jeff initially, it was like a no-brainer to him. He was like, I'm in college, I'm finishing up, why wouldn't I take the money and run? For me, that is crazy. We need income. Well, we prayed about it. We talked about it. Oh, and let me add this. Remember I said Jeff was working on his final thesis? Let me give you the title of what his final thesis was. You ready? It was, let me find it on here. Why the American auto industry will be surpassed by the foreign auto industry. That was the name of his final thesis he was for. So that's why it was a no-brainer to him. He believed that that buyout was God's provision and a way to bridge the gap between the old career and the new career while he finished college. And so we took the buyout. He took the buyout. And, oh, man, our family must have thought we were crazy. And I tell you, I thought we were crazy at times. I mean, here we are, both without employment, and we have a newborn baby. And we didn't have any, like, you know, wrench aunts or uncles to call on. It was all on us. And so it took 5 long months before Jeff found a job, got an interview for a job. By then, I was very anxious about our bank account. I kept seeing all these debits, but there was no deposits going in. And so his interview was scheduled for the Monday after Thanksgiving. And the Friday after Thanksgiving, he woke me up, to inform me that he had partial facial paralysis, known as Bell's palsy. He looked like he had had a stroke, and I don't know if you guys know about it, but he woke up with Bell's palsy. Here it is, the Friday before his interview on Monday. So you can only imagine what was going through my mind. It was a very quiet weekend in our house that weekend. And I wish I could say that I was calling on the Lord and that I was, you know, trusting the Lord. But instead, all I kept thinking of is, I'm going to have to bail us out of this problem. I'm going to have to go back to work. Jeff, on the other hand, he turned his heart to God. He prayed, not knowing what he should do. So that Monday, he woke up, he got dressed, he even had his little handkerchief in his hand to manually blink his eye, and he went to that interview, trusting the Lord. He got to the interview. I'm at home thinking there's no way he's going to get it. He called me on his way home, and he said, "You are not going to believe this." Come to find out, one of the hiring managers who was interviewing him looked at him and said, "Oh, is that Bell's palsy? My wife just got over it." He went on to explain to the other hiring manager of, "Oh, it's a minor thing, not a big deal, it's temporary, it'll go away." What is the chances of that? What's the chances of that? That is crazy. So, of course, he got the job. And before he started that first day on the job, Bell's palsy was gone. Isn't that good? So I really think the Lord was showing me some things. He was growing me through that situation. Well, Jeff finished college as planned. And as planned, he applied for jobs throughout the whole U.S. looking for better opportunity. He got a job in Pennsylvania. We moved there. And I was angry. I was angry. Look, as they say, I was an angry woman. Once we got there, though, I kind of realized, okay, there's air in Pennsylvania, too. I'll live. I ended up trying to make the best of it, and we actually enjoyed it. We traveled the East Coast and just really enjoyed our time there. Well, Jeff called me from work, on his way home from work one day, with the famous words, "You are not going to believe this." He informed me that he received a call from Lockheed Martin in Ocala, Florida, for an interview. Now remember, my issue is security. And this man is doing everything, like taking me out of my comfort zone. So he flew down to Ocala for the interview. And he called me afterwards, and he said, "I got good news, and I've got some bad news." And I said, "Okay, what's the good news?" He said, "I killed it. I killed this interview." "Okay, what's the bad news?" He said, "You are not going to like it here." After 4 months of being on the East Coast, we packed up and relocated to Ocala. So y'all can only imagine just how frazzled I was by this time. And we're like adding babies along the way as we go. And so we were in Ocala. It was not my favorite place, but it wasn't horrible. We had a lot of fun in the villages, letting Braylon dance with the retired folks. We got plugged into a church there. We had a lot of opportunity to serve in various capacities. And our church members, they were like family to us, away from home. And so let me mention this. 6 months after being in Ocala, one day our phone rang off the hook. We were getting calls left and right from family and friends in Ohio to inform us that the facility where Jeff worked closed its doors for the last time a day before Christmas. So that crazy man, you know, I thought my husband was crazy. It's like, "Lord, why I have to, you know, go, you know, follow him." All of a sudden, he didn't seem so crazy to me anymore. It was like, man, maybe he really is trusting the Lord. Maybe the Lord's hand is in this. Once again, the Lord used that to grow me. So we spent 2 years in Ocala, and Jeff had an opportunity for us to relocate to Orlando. By this time, I was happy to go. I was really excited. The Lord had changed my heart. So we have been here in Ocala for over 11 years, and I will tell you, I'm so happy to be here, and I would not want to be anywhere else unless he tells me we're moving again. I tell you, our kids are flourishing. Jeff has had a lot of upward mobility within his career, and our home is peaceful. But I can tell you, throughout these changes, God has taught me that having an amenable disposition, an agreeable disposition that's spoken of, how valuable that is, and unlike the strong disposition like my namesake. When I approach things with that strong disposition, honestly, a lot of times I end up with a lot of needless pain. What I didn't mention before, I kind of hinted on to it, that Jeff and I, when we were first married, I was the major decision maker in our house. Pretty much what I said went. And after a while, I got tired of running things. And when I decided to choose to follow him, it's amazing how he bloomed, how a leader emerged in him that I just never imagined was there. So I encourage you ladies in that area, for those of you who are married. So, as you can see, the makeover process is not always easy, and it's not always a fast process, and it will continue until the day you die. In closing, I'd like to leave you with 5 lessons. It's on the sheet I gave you that I've learned through the years that have helped me out on this journey. I won't read the scripture and everything I don't know how much time I have.
How much you want.
Okay. Well, the first one, these are just 5 out of many lessons that I've learned, but I thought these were relevant. Number 1, keep an eternal perspective. You know, this life we live right now is just a bleep on the timeline. You know, it really is nothing but a breath. So having an eternal perspective will help you when it comes to making right decisions that will have eternal reward. Number 2, turn complaints into prayers. I had to learn that one. I spend a lot of time, I'll speak for myself, complaining about everything. And it just drains you. I mean, I can remember going to bed at night like, "Woo, I'm exhausted. All I did was complain today." It's not productive. Try to remember, and I have to try to remember, to turn those complaints into prayers. You're saying the same thing, but talk to the Lord about it. It makes a difference. There'll be more done through prayer than through any complaint we can ever present. Number 3, Jesus wants a relationship with you, not religious activity. Okay? He's more concerned about a relationship. The activity will follow when you're in relationship. He wants us to think like Christians, not merely act like Christians. Don't focus on all the do's and don'ts. I was caught up in that. Like, oh, should I do this? Just live your life, stay close to him, study his word, be with his people, pray, and let him change you from the inside out instead of being focused so much on the do's and don'ts. Number 4, trusting God takes practice. Throughout life, you will have many opportunities to trust God at his word. Test him out. When something arises, consult him. What is it that I should do? Consult him, take a chance on him. And I'll tell you, you will go, when he shows himself faithful, you will go from a head knowledge of who he is to an experiential knowledge where you will know by experience who he is. And then number 5, last but not least, remember what God has brought you through. Sometimes things happen and your faith is shaken, but you've got to go back. I was blessed enough that my mother-in-law, the one who had led me to the Lord, I had times where I was, you know, throughout that whole journey where I was depressed. I went through all kinds of craziness, and I would call her. She was the person I would call. And I remember she would say, "Now hold up. Let's go all the way back." And she would walk me through, how did you grow up? How did the Lord bring you from that? And she would just walk me through literally my entire life as she knew it, reminding me of God, how he had brought me through so much. And I tell you, when I got off the phone with her, I was like, wow, okay, I can trust him. So recount those times. And also, be that woman for your friends. When you have a girlfriend calling you with complaints or whatever, shut it down. Say, hold up, let's back it up. And help her to remember those things that the Lord has brought her through. So that's pretty much all I had. I want to thank you all. I'm sorry if I was quivery, but thank you for this opportunity to stand up here.